Good afternoon. My name's Elise Menkoff. I am honored to be president of Suncoast Tiger Bag. That is my husband clapping for me. Honey, you are coming home tonight. Thank you. We are trying to work with the mic system. We are trying to get our air down. So we are working with a couple venue issues. But we are so appreciative that you are coming out here today to listen to the debate surrounding District 5. Before we jump in, I'd like to also remind you that we have a new website that is up and running, running for some of you. And I'm going to ask Joe Hamilton to come up and discuss a little bit about the website, a little bit about our member levels, and the exciting things that are on the horizon. And then we'll jump into a little bit about today and about the future of Tiger Bag.
Good afternoon. I'm going to assume if my wife was here that she would have started a round of applause too, so I'll thank her for that when we get home. My name is Joe Hamilton. I'm a co-founder of the St. Petersburg Group with my partner Irv Cohen, who is floating around here somewhere. We're just about to complete our first year of partnership with Tiger Bay, and it's been a fantastic year. And I can say that in working with Ms. Minkoff, that she definitely deserves that round of applause. She's been a pleasure to work with, as has the rest of the board, including Barclay and Harvey and Matt and all the other folks in Joe Bordeaux. So I wanted to kind of run through a few of the things that we can celebrate for the year that has just passed and some of the things we can look forward to. We, in addition to Joe Bordeaux's great audio coverage on Radio St. Pete, we've augmented that with some video coverage. We're going to three-camera shoot now of all the Tiger Bay luncheons that will go out on the St. Pete Catalyst. St. Pete Catalyst launched a new platform called Community Voices, which is organizations around the area who've committed to put out pieces of content on a regular basis, and then this represents the Community Voices entry for Tiger Bay, and we're appreciative of that. Additionally, we had some great new content in this last year, some important panels around equity, some good single speakers, some good names there, as well as our usual dedication to local politics, which has you here today. One of our big goals was to get our average attendance above 100 per luncheon in the first year, and I'm proud to say that the number we were shared yesterday was 107. So we beat that goal by 7%, and we'll set a goal for 150 on average for next year. As Elise mentioned, we did launch a new website, and with that came some new membership levels. And I wanted to run through those very quickly. The standard membership price will move to $100 in 2020, but all the folks who were our members now will have a legacy membership, which will stay at the current rate of $75. And anybody who joins between now and the end of the year will come in as that legacy member. So if you're thinking about joining, definitely get your memberships in, signed up before the end of the year, so you can retain that $75 price, which is a fantastic value. Additionally, we have added a couple of more memberships. There's a family and household membership, which is $175. That's for a nuclear household or under one address that you can come. Everybody can come at that rate for the annual membership. For individuals who want to give a little more to support Tiger Bay, we have the congressional membership, which gets you automatic entry to all the lunches or any of the events that we have throughout the year. You also get two guest passes to bring folks with you as your guest. When you sign up for the membership, you'll get a public thank you here at this event and on the website as well. That is $350 for the year. We have a corporate membership, which gets three entries to every lunch, a thank you at the lunch when you sign up, a mention in our newsletter, and you get your company name on the Tiger Bay website. And finally, at the top of the heap is the cabinet membership, which includes five entries to every lunch, 2 minutes of podium time up here at one of our lunches, company logo permanently on every email for the year that we send out, as well as the homepage of the website. I will also add that the website is partnered with Spark St. Pete, and there are three advertising options available on that website if your company would like some presence and to reach out and communicate with the Tiger Bay audience. And we'll be working on some auto billing and additional features so that you don't have to actually go through the sign-up process. You can just say, I'm going to be there, and we'll take care of the rest for those of you who are so inclined to do that. And I think that is, I do want to say that also we did send out the invoices for 2019. You should have received those. All the folks who were legacy members who were there last year, your auto renew is on January 1st. So you'll have this invoice for this year, and then your next one will come on January 1st. Of next year. Anybody who signed up this year or who signs up going forward, you'll just auto-renew at the at the time you signed up. So the things that have been done in the past where you have the partial and prorated things, that goes away now. It's just on a true year-by-year billing. And that's about it. If you have any questions, we'll be floating around. I do want to give a thank you to Megan Holmes, who's done a great job in the last year of acting as the main operator that puts all these together, and she's done a great job in addition to the rest of the team, which is Kira and Jonah. So feel free to reach out to any of them if you have any questions or concerns, and enjoy lunch. Thanks.
Just as Joe noted, we've been doing a lot of changing internally and externally of Tiger Bay. If you haven't noticed in the past several months, Tiger Bay has been in the process of mixing up our lineup of speakers, moderators, topics, and generally the way we do business. We dare at times to not only question our own Tiger Bay history, but that of our region and our state. But more importantly, we have been here to question those friends and citizens and elected officials who are in our own backyard, and to do that questioning in a manner that raises the conversation and challenges each of us to take a step forward where intellectual comfort and safety are not convenient or expected. We are Tiger Bay, and we are where you need to be for those expansive and inclusive dialogues. Will the board members who are here today please stand and be recognized? It is these very board members who are changing the landscape of Tiger Bay, viewing it with fresh and discerning eye, and making the hard decisions that will continue to make Tiger Bay the most relevant civic group in Pinellas for those seeking to get the answers to difficult questions. However, we're realists. Tiger Bay exists in a friendly yet competitive arena of homeowner associations, universities, colleges, churches, nonprofits, and organizations like FAST that hold forums, panels, and engagements. It is within that arena we at Tiger Bay are called to raise our benchmarks and provide programming that is different and compelling. In the midst of raising those benchmarks, there is one constant. We know that Tiger Bay holds a relevance among its peers as a place to be for civic, nonprofit, and elected officials. It is where for over 40 years in the past and 40 years into our future, civic leaders have and will have mixed, mingled, and engaged in spirited and respectful dialogue. We continue that tradition today. We are Tiger Bay. City Council District 5 Representative Steve Cornell will term out of council this year, leaving District 5 an empty seat with no incumbent. We've asked all the primary candidates to join us today to differentiate themselves from one another in the nonpartisan City Council election. Thank you to the candidates that have attended today. We are so looking forward to hearing your perspectives. In order to ask a question, you must be a member of Tiger Bay, and you must have a current membership status in Tiger Bay. If you would like to join today in order to ask a question, you may see Megan, and she will gladly sign you up for a membership. At this time, we will now welcome our elected officials and candidates. So those from District 5, stand up and state your name and what you are running for. Please raise your hand and Megan will come around with the microphone.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Trinia Cox. I'm a candidate for the City of St. Petersburg, City Council District 5.
Good afternoon. I'm Deborah Fig Sanders and I am the candidate for St. Petersburg City Council District 5.
I'm Beth Connor, and I'm a candidate for St. Pete City Council District 5.
My name is Ann Hirsch. I'm running for City Council District 5 on a platform of unity through reparations.
Good afternoon. My name is Aretha Keeley-Kanyon, and I'm a candidate for District 7 City Council.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Orlando Acosta. I'm a candidate for St. Petersburg City Council District Number 3.
Hello, I'm Tommy Minkoff, Circuit Court Judge, Pinellas County.
Good afternoon. I'm Ken Welch, candidate. No, too early. County Commission District 7.
Good afternoon, Renee Flowers. I'm chair of the Pinellas County School Board.
Michael Verdovich, City Councilman Gulfport.
Hi, Chris Lotbala, and I serve in House District 67.
Nicole Carr, District 3, Pinellas County School Board.
Joanne Lentino, and I'm serving on the at-large District 1 school board.
Thank you, candidates and elected officials. We are most appreciative of your attendance today, and also thank you to Radio St. Pete and Tiger Bay Vice President Joe Bordeaux and our media partners, the St. Petersburg Group and St. Pete Catalyst, for their live online broadcasting of the program today. We're not going to take a break because one of the change-ups that Tiger Bay has made is that we are trying to get our programs in by 1, no later than 1:15, so you can get back to your busy day at your offices. The candidates will be introduced by our moderator today, Reverend J.C. Pritchett. He's founder of the Legacy Center for Social Justice. He is the pastor for Faith Church and is president of Legacy Week, which is a celebration of African American history and culture, which will be held in our fair city in February. He has been a part of the inaugural cohort Harvard Divinity School for Executive Education program. And this summer he was accepted to Oxford University's Summer Theology program. And once again, he is off to school, where he begins shortly a six-month program at Florida State's nonprofit executive program. He is married to the ever-patient Karen, and they are proud parents of J.C. III, who is a rising sophomore at the University of South Florida. Pastor, thank you for spending your last couple hours here in St. Petersburg with Tiger Bay. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for opening statements, and our moderator will direct questions to the candidates to get us started. From there, we will turn it over to our members for questions. We operate under a civility code. You will find the civility code on your table. Only Tiger Bay members, again, will have the opportunity to ask questions. Questions must be framed in 20 seconds. No speeches, no lectures. Questions, and we are most appreciative of that. The candidates will have 90 seconds to answer each question, and if appropriate, 30 seconds to respond to one another if needed. Corey Adler is our timer up front, and she will let you know when your time is up, and we ask that you respect that time. We also have some fang and claw raiders in the audience. Will you raise your hand? Okay, thank you. They will be rating our questions, and at the end of our session, we will award our Fang and Claw Award. Reverend, if you'd like to come forward.
Introduction, I'm going to ask the ladies to tell us their St. Pete story. My St. Pete story is that my parents met at 16th Street Middle School, which is now John Hopkins. They married after high school. I, too, married a girl I met in middle school. We attended the same high school, Gibbs High School. We married and we raised our son in the same neighborhood, Childs Park. Though we have lived away and returned home, there's something about St. Petersburg that has encouraged us to make this our home. So what is your St. Petersburg story by way of introduction? Tell us something about you that we may not know. We'll start at this end, Beth.
My name is Beth Connor. I'm a lifelong resident of District 5 in Elk Point. As you may not know, I am one of nine children. I'm very happy to have grown up in St. Petersburg. I love the city and I know it well. If you ask my friends and neighbors about it, through the years living in St. Petersburg, I'm not going to stand back and wait for someone else to fix the problem.
I will jump right in and do what I can to take steps to correct it. They'll also tell you that I will not back down when something I believe in is in jeopardy. And one of those things I most firmly believe in is protecting our environment. I have been a member of the Sierra Club since 1986, both as a professional and as a volunteer. And I've worked on national, state, and local issues. And I have a firm grasp of what we need to do to move our city forward in regards to sustainability and making sure that future generations can enjoy the childhood that I had. We have woods left, we have places for kids to enjoy, as well as tackling the issues that we have, mainly importance in our neighborhood, economic development, transportation, and affordable housing. Thank you.
My name is Ann Hirsch. I have a St. Petersburg story. It includes me, but it's not limited to me. I'm running on a platform of unity through reparations because I believe there's a divide that was here from the beginning of St. Petersburg. It's clear to me that this history does not live in the past. It's alive in the conditions that people face today. As a longtime community activist and a midwife, I firmly believe that we must create a city where all children, all people can thrive. Reparations to the Black community is the way that we do that. A growing movement here in St. Petersburg and around the nation supports me. Black labor cleared the swamps, laid the roads, staffed the tourist and nursing home industry to build the St. Pete economy. Despite near slave labor, the ingenuity and hard work of the Black community built commerce on the South Side, Black businesses, and established on 22nd Street in Methodist Town, in the gas plant district, and Jordan Park provided affordable housing. But sadly, the city policy has destroyed all of that by putting an interstate through the 22nd Street, a sports dome on the gas plant, and luxury condos everywhere. The city justifies this false narrative with the false narrative of Black teenagers stealing cars as the main problem in our city. But it is not. The Black community is not criminal. It is the police who harass and brutalize the Black community. It is the city officials who make policies that push the Black community out. And it is the developers who fund them who are the criminals. In this election, though, the people have a different choice. We can right the wrongs of the past and unite with the Black community's demand for reparations. A public policy of reparations and economic development to the Black community will solve every problem that we face in this city. My name is Ann Hirsch. I've been a citizen here for over 50 years. Vote for me on August 27th for unity through reparations.
Testing. Good afternoon again. I'm Trinia Cox, and I'm a candidate for the City of St. Petersburg City Council District 5. I'm also the Tampa Bay Times recommendation for this position, so I thank them for that evaluation. Hopefully that will guide your decision-making as well. I am a native of the City of St. Petersburg. I'm a graduate of Gibbs High School, and I'm going to give you my St. Petersburg story. I'm not sure if you guys know, but there's a Reverend Wayne Thompson in this community. He's very well known. He's a senior pastor of First Baptist Institutional Church. He and I integrated the Student Council Association at Escambia High School in Pensacola, Florida in 1967. That's my St. Petersburg story. Okay. We went on from being a graduate of Gibbs High School to become a Thurgood Marshall Fellow, and received a master's in sociology. I also have a degree and certificate from Eckerd College with their Leadership Institute. I'm a graduate of Leadership Pinellas in 2003. So that covers my leadership development. And I've had a chance to put those skills to work. I've been 40 years in the workforce, and that includes child welfare, juvenile justice, education, as well as public administration. I've had the honor of working for David Fisher, former mayor here in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I ran four of his programs, the Neighborhood Conservation Program, the Rental Inspection Program, Neighborhood Conservation, and the Minority Business Enterprise. I have the skill sets that you need. I'm a former president of St. Petersburg NACP, and also chair the Faith-Based, Community-Based Advisory Council for the State of Florida by appointment, as well as the Social Allocation Committee here of the City of St. Petersburg. I simply want to take the vitality, the economic vitality of downtown St. Petersburg and spread that to our neighborhoods. I have the skill set and the experience and the leadership to do so. And I'm looking forward to your vote on August 27th to be your next city council person, District 5. Thank you.
Good afternoon again. I'm Deborah Fig Sanders, and I would like to say hello and introduce myself to those that do not know me and say hello to all the familiar faces that I see in the audience. I, too, am a candidate for District 5, and my St. Pete story is just this. I came here 6 months old, so that pretty much makes me a native. I'm 54 years old, a wife, a mother, a grandmother, a business owner, and I've had the opportunity, and many of you are familiar with the time that I've spent with the Child's Park Y as the executive director. There I was able to formulate programs where I have partnerships with city, county, police department, and the sheriff's department. But my St. Pete story is, I attended Gibbs High School, senior class president, voted most likely to succeed, and Dr. Wayne G. Thompson is also one of my endorsements, as well as the pastor of my church, First Baptist Institutional Church, right by YMCA. I understand what our community needs because I've been here. I am the person that I'm standing here committed to represent. I am that business owner. I am that corporate trainer. I am that corporate manager. I am that one that worked in social services for over 35 years. And I come to you with a servant heart, not as a politician, not as someone that has an agenda. My only service is to take my level of commitment to the community on a higher ground. And I ask you, as voters, as advocates for our children, for our elders, for our community, for our great city, to please go and share Deborah Fig Sanders, your candidate for District 5, City St. Petersburg City Council. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. And I want to start with Ann. I want you to expand on the reparations conversation, because I think that Commerce Park and the gas plant area provide opportunities now to have a conversation about development. So can you begin expanding out the reparations for the conversation about where we are with land opportunities in St. Petersburg?
So on my platform, and we make clear that the land underneath the dome, 85 acres, it belongs to the black community. It was a black community. Had 100 black businesses, 300 homes, and 800 people lived there. And that was raised to put in a sports dome. Well, we understand that that needs to go back to the black community. That was stolen from the black community. As I referenced earlier, our city was built by the labor of the black community, unpaid labor, really. And that needs to be returned. We cannot move forward together unless we right those wrongs of the past. And when we do that, and we return the land under the dome and infusion of capital for new and existing black businesses, the black community will be able to decide what to put there. And all of us will benefit from a thriving black community. When we have a black community that is self-determining, that has their own businesses and can make their own decisions about what's happening for them in their community, that uplifts the whole St. Petersburg. It will put, when affordable housing is there, it will lower the price of housing for everyone. When businesses are there, the tax base will be lifted, and it's the most sustainable way that we can move forward. When we
give back what was stolen from the black community. We create a sustainable situation for years to come where there is self-determination.
The question is expanding the conversation about reparations to talk about development opportunities at Commerce Park, which is on 22nd Street, or at Tropicana Field.
All right, thank you so much. Well, this whole issue of reparations, let's be clear about some things. There are, in St. Petersburg, like all American cities, there are a lot of disparities in health, education, and wealth. And there are a lot of ways over the years we've tried to deal with these disparities. Here, let's talk about the CRA, and certainly Commerce Park would be a part of that, taking a look at how we can reduce the housing, how we can certainly deal with the wealth gap, as well as deal with the issue of the lack of academic achievement affects so many of our African-American families. I think we just have to be very certain and very intentional about this. The strategic planning that went into downtown St. Petersburg certainly has to go into moving forward with African-Americans. I think the best way in which we can handle those disparities has to do with poverty reduction. So let's look forward to how that can happen. And that requires a collective impact model so that you can require all new housing. It deals with all income levels. You have to make that intentional. We have to also be certain that we grow our own through workforce development. CRA can do that, as well as we can look at partnerships with our learning institutions to make certain they are being trained and focusing on the industries that have higher income levels. That is so important. I think we can stop this pipeline to prison, this intergenerational poverty, if we're intentional, strategic planning, flexible funding for that to occur, as well as making certain the CRA is used for its intended purpose, to help those who live in those poverty-stricken communities. And it's the largest one in Pinellas County, and making certain that we have the accountability. Thank you.
What are your thoughts on developing the property at Commerce Park, 22nd Street, or in the Tropicana Field?
As far as Commerce Park, me sitting on the Citizens Advisory Committee in regards to Commerce Park, when that proposal was initially introduced, I was not in favor of the Commerce Park development that they currently have right now. I did not think that it brought what that community needed that would provide the livable wages and the affordable housing. And as of an August 6th meeting that we actually had, it was also re-presented where there were several questions that I was able to ask that they did not have the questions to, which meant it had to be removed off the agenda for City Council. So with that moving forward, anything that goes into that Commerce Park area has to be something that's going to benefit the overall community in which they are actually wanting to bring that in. And I do applaud the city for wanting to have that additional conversation as to what could actually be a win-win for everyone that's coming into that arena. As far as those 85 acres, the TROP is there. 2027, the Rays will be gone whether we want them to or not. But what I'm really hoping is that they would take those 85 acres and actually utilize that to not only build up the city, but connect and bring those opportunities for those in the least more deserving areas. I don't want it to be seen as something that as a bad thing, because you know, a convention center, those retails, those different organizations in economic development that some smaller business enterprises can actually benefit from, we need to make sure that those are assessed and used properly. Thank you.
I think we're moving in the right direction with community benefits agreements, which the city is looking into. As far as Commerce Park, right now things are back on the table, and I think there will be a lot of input and scrutiny on what is going to go there. As far as the Tropicana Field site, 85 acres in the middle of one of the fastest growing and popular Southeast cities, it is going to take a lot of proper planning and deciding as a community how we're going to move forward and develop this to the benefit of everyone. That is jobs for people of all educational backgrounds, having a large corporation that will bring in these jobs, connecting all of the communities around the TROP, having a convention center, which we talk about, that could have a lot of different focuses. And one of those I heard about was having different communities represented inside a convention center that we could bring thousands of people in. So what I see is the opportunities are endless, and the opportunities for input are also endless. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to connect something, Ms. Hirsch. Ms. Cox brought up the CRA, and so on this part of questioning, I want to talk about what are your thoughts on how the CRA is set up? One of the problems that we've experienced with the CRA is that you have to have matching funds. So if you have matching funds, then you get, if you got the funds, you get the matching dollars. So can you expand the conversation and talk about how the CRA money is used and your thoughts on that? We'll start with Ms. Cox.
My concern about CRA is that we have to be careful not to see it as a silver bullet, okay? It is one funding stream. It is long-term, but it is term-limited. You only start in 2015, so you only have the 2045 to make some things happen in the most impoverished area of Pinellas County, okay? When you have requirements in terms of using it, where you have to have matching dollars, when you're also forced to look at whether or not you have the upfront dollars for reimbursement, you're having a problem there because you are eliminating a large group of people who live in that area or those who want to invest in that area. They don't have the wherewithal to take advantage of it. So I think that criteria has to be revisited. Then I think we have to be very clear about what it takes. Most poverty reduction models, and that's what you're talking about, require not just $50,000 here, not just $35,000. It costs millions of dollars over time. If you did a Harlem Kids Zone model in that area to start growing our children towards actually independency, you're talking about, that's $96 million right there. If you're looking at an opportunity where we can get the collective impact and everyone involved, because it's not just one silver bullet, you're talking about 10-year plans where you may have 10% movement in terms of poverty. If you look at the Canadian model for it, they have always used $2 million plus as seed. They bring in other municipalities to work with them, and they agree on a common agenda, reinforcing activities, and they have measurements to make it happen. It's not 12 people finishing a financial aid course. That doesn't do it. Thank you.
Thank you. The CRA. I have served on the CAC since 2015. And in those 4 years, a lot of things have been done that a lot of the community just don't understand has happened. And one thing that I've had the conversation with is that, and I love the fact that those meetings are recorded and everything is documented because I love to ask those questions. And one thing that I've made very clear is that we have new money spending it old ways. And I will give the city credit that they've actually taken some of the recommendations of CAC. We've actually been able to change and develop 14 new plans over the past 2 or 3 years. But again, those dollars are not being used for what they were intended. Yes, they were designed and secured to reduce poverty and blight. But some of the projects that have been brought before us, yes, a lot of them are, you know, reimbursable. You have to have matching funds. And I've asked, how can that help areas that are in poverty, that are experiencing blight? So what I have asked is that they please go and find some money. We have ways of finding money to go and see if we can run our own program and we can actually help some of our smaller business owners, some of our nonprofits, our social services, where we can actually grant them similar to the CDBG process in giving them the money to do what they need to do to be successful and expand their programs. So we are working, we are having those conversations, and then there are those such as myself that are sitting at the table making those things happen.
I do think that the CRA model does need to be looked at some of the rules that I think they have run up against that does not help small businesses as much as it could. There are small businesses that have to fight against each other for a limited amount of money, and I don't think that really helps. The CRA is something that we have waited a long time to get and has been extended, which is a good thing. I am concerned about the decision not to support one of the best affordable housing projects to come online on the on 31st Street and 26th Avenue South. Federal Housing Administration and Fair Housing Act states that everyone who is eligible should be able to go into affordable housing. And the group felt that only people who lived in the CRA should be in it. I think it should be fair for everyone, because housing is for everyone, and we all need to move forward and work on that together. Thank you.
From my perspective, the CRA is gentrification of the Black community. In a city that was built on the oppression of the Black community, we now have a city that is all about profit, pushing out the Black community and regular working people. I'm talking about a bold new vision, a complete transformation of the system in our city. Reparations gets to the heart of that. Reparations returns what's been stolen so that the Black community can create self-determination. That is very different than a few things here and there. $60 million over 30 years, that is a slap in the face of the Black community that will not transform our city. We need to transform our city. And I know there are many, many people behind me. There are many people all around the nation talking about reparations. We can do something. We can have a new kind of city where everyone can thrive, no one at the expense of anyone else. If we continue on the trajectory we are on right now, this will be a Miami Beach for the rich. First the Black community is pushed out, then all working white people.
I just wanted to make a comment regarding the Shores apartment on 31st Street and 26th Avenue. It was presented before CAC on August 6th, and I was the one that actually reviewed the packet and asked the question about the income requirements that they were expecting the residents to have. And my question to them was, is the money, because it was in regards to CRA funds that they wanted to use for this housing apartment. My question to them was, so basically the 80 to 120% AMI that you're asking us to give you CRA dollars for, people from the CRA could not afford to live there because teachers don't make 120 to 80% AMI. So they had to take that back to the table and renegotiate that. And they did bring up that Fair Housing Act, but that Fair Housing Act wasn't against the developer, but it was against the residents in which the CRA funds were secured for. So that's why they had to take it back and remove it off of the agenda for City Council. It wasn't that CRA residents couldn't live in it, they really couldn't live in it because they couldn't afford it. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to? Okay, good. 33 years ago.
That wasn't what I understood from it, but I respect the answer.
33 years ago, next month, 18-year-old Tyron Lewis was killed in St. Petersburg. I want to raise this so that we can address body cameras and overall your opinion of Chief Holloway and Chief Holloway remaining as our police chief.
I support body cameras. I think they protect both the public and the police. As a city council person, I do not have a say. We would not have a say on whether the police chief stays or goes. That is the mayor's prerogative.
On my platform is Black community control of the police. I think we can all agree that body cameras throughout our country have made very little difference. Just in the spring of this year, we had two videos of two different African-American men being beat up, first by a sheriff and then by police from St. Petersburg. They got 2 weeks suspension. So the answer is Black community control of the police, the ability to fire, hire, train, and discipline the police that will function in the Black community. Currently, police in the Black community are a military occupying force. They are here to enforce gentrification. And I say no to that. And I call on all justice-loving people in this city to say that we want something different. When we say Black community control of the police in the majority Black neighborhoods, then they will have police there like we are used to police functioning in the white community for us, to serve and protect us. But that's not what happens on the South Side in the Black community. We all know this.
We all know this. It's not something that any of us can deny. And so it's very important that we go way beyond body cameras.
St. Petersburg is a community of about 600 plus police officers, and about 700 are in reserves. And that's a substantial police force for our population of about 263,000 people. Now, the deal is this. The city of St. Petersburg and the police department embraces professionalism and a community-oriented approach to policing. But having body cameras would send a very, very strong message to the community of respect for the community and high accountability for our police officers. So I think it would be wise to join the national trend of actually bringing in body cameras. We don't want an incident to drive our decision making. We don't want a crisis, another one, to drive our decision making. We don't do that when it relates to sustainability. We don't do that as it relates to equity. And let's not do it as it relates to policing. Let's get the body cameras in there, send that strong message to the community that we are about accountability. Let's build that trust so that we can keep our community moving forward in a positive direction. I think it takes more than just the cameras, because we've seen people on camera murdered, and people have not moved forward with the proper level of justice. We have seen that happen. But it is a powerful tool that gets us in that direction and make a stronger argument for that kind of accountability. So I am certainly for body cameras.
In regards to body cameras, I met with Chief Holloway, and I just point blank asked him, where was he at this point with the implementation of body cameras? Yes, there has been funding that was included in the budget for the dash cams, and that's wonderful. But after having the conversation with him in regards to body cameras, I am in support of body cameras because, again, I agree, it protects not only, it protects both parties. No matter where we go, no matter what we do, when I was an executive director at Child Spark Y, every time I opened the door, I was being filmed. Everywhere we go, everyone is always being recorded. But when I actually had the conversation with him and he explained to me the cost of it, and again, the mother of three young men, there is not a price that you can pay or put on the life of my child. So I understand trying to be fiscally responsible, but I also wanted the officers to realize that we're not playing a I got you moment. We want to make sure that everyone involved and that we have substantial data to prosecute what we need to, and those cameras would help. One of the things that I did agree with is the always on cameras. From the time you leave, just imagine, from the time you leave your house until the time you come home, everything you say, do, breathe, move, conversation is recorded. There has to be a compromise when it comes down to the body cameras, but I really do believe that it will help both ends and it will support both parties.
Does anyone have a rebuttal? I just want to add that I'm not for on and off button. I think if we have body cameras, I want to make certain that they don't have that kind of discretion involved. I think it's important that we're talking about strong accountability, then let's have it. Other communities have found ways to finance this. We have a forfeiture grant, monies or dollars available. I think we just have to be very intentional in making certain that we purchase them, we don't do any further study. Other communities have embraced it. I think it's certainly the wave of the future for St. Petersburg as we move toward being this one community. It will not happen if you continue to have distrust between the police and our larger community. Let's go for accountability, 100%.
Thank you. The city council, the past few decades, have been reflective of our community. I'd like to have your thoughts on single-member districts. Both the Pinellas County Commission and the school board elect four members from true single-member districts. Would you support true single-member districts for some or all of the city council? Why and why not? And I'm just gonna add this. One of the reasons it's a concern is that usually what happens is, in the primary, certain things happen, and then the two people get out of the primary and run in the general election, and you don't have the diversity showed lately in these elections. So, it's yours.
Well, again, when you talk about the primary, again, that is something that we need to consider, because you campaign and the people in your district act really get to, well, hopefully get to understand and research the candidates. And then you do go citywide, and so now you're multiple districts and you're having the challenge of having to educate those who may elect a candidate that they really don't understand, and I think that the candidate needs to be reflective of the district that they are going to serve. And those that are voting to put them there might not understand those challenges that's being reflective of, for example, District 5 is extremely diverse. But the majority of the programs and things that are needed in District 5 are reflective in South St. Pete. So when you have someone that's living in the Tyrone area and Old Northeast area, they're not really, although the issues were more alike than we are different, but the issues can't always be addressed, which is why you are voted single district as single district members. I would like to see it remain single district if I can, but that's just not the way the government works. But as far as benefiting, I do appreciate the fact that we have single districts, and I wish that once the election has been done, it has been done, because you understand and you know who you're putting in those positions.
I think single districts are important. I believe in democracy. I believe that the person who makes the best argument, who can get through to the voters and prove what they've done in the district, and is the best person for the job is how democracy works. And so that our district is a myriad of socioeconomic and everybody in our district can count on me to fight for them ferociously for what we need. We need economic development. We need affordable housing. We need to protect the character of our city. We need the same things that people in every district need. In talking to people door to door, I hear that they want better schools, they want to be safe in their homes, they want to be able to get to work without standing in water or being stuck at a light. And so these are issues that are for everyone, not just, I don't like the division one way or the other, because I'm a candidate for everybody, and I will work as hard as I can to make that so.
Well, I want to get back to what I was talking about, the history of St. Petersburg. So the single member district was put in place. Currently, it's a single member district. The district chooses the person, and then it has to go to the majority of the city. That was put in place as voter suppression for the Black community. Make no mistake about that. That's where that came from. So that a district, a majority Black district, could elect an official, or the top two vote getters, and then the majority white city could veto that. There's other voter suppression that has happened in St. Petersburg. The districts have been gerrymandered, so now there's only one majority Black district in this city. And what I'm talking about is uncovering and making clear the divide that we all know are here. I am not creating this division. This division is here, and my campaign is the only one that's addressing that. We can move forward in a new way. We can be a just city where everyone can look each other in the eye for real and move forward when we right the wrongs of the past. And I will work to make a single member district, only that, no primary, one election, general election, winner take all, so that the districts do have representation of the people who are in that district.
Thank you. I certainly embrace a single member district. That approach, I think it has its merits. People get to know your values, your guiding principles. They get to hear very clearly what you're about, what your history has been about, and that's fine. And if you're so successful and get a chance to be one of the two to go on to the general election, now you're in harm's way because of the very demographics of this city. And I think we have to revisit that at some point. We really do. Because I think we want to put in place a system that allows folks to be highly educated on their candidates, be clear about them being able to meet the needs of their particular district. And I think that's best covered using a single member district approach only. So I would see a need for us to revisit that. District 5 is very diverse, that's true. We have one out of four people We got one out of five people who make less than $25,000 a year. And that means they can never be homeowners because you have to make at least $19 an hour to be considered for home ownership. That's a problem. Every generation should look forward to realizing the American dream. And our current rate in terms of salaries is not happening in this community. It's a great divide. We're going to have to revisit a livable wage, and the city of St. Petersburg is going to have to set the example, because that's important if you want to talk about equity, if you want to talk about a great city for everyone to prosper. We're going to have to look at that, because that affects our housing. It also affects the kind of education our children receive. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. We'll now take questions from Tiger Bay members. Megan has the microphone, and we'll start here. Ms. Lerner.
Linda Lerner. In 2013, Steve Cornell was the only council person to vote against the sale of Bayfront Medical Center. At that time, now Deputy Mayor Kanika Tomlin was a top administrator at Bayfront. What questions would you like to ask her about the sale?
That wasn't on my list.
Okay, well, I'll take a stab at it. I think we've had some issues with certainly that sale. And of course, hindsight is 2020. We might want to look and revisit that. Privatization can be a real serious problem. It has been with our prisons. It has been when we start looking at our juvenile justice programs, and certainly we've seen our share of medical errors. So I think it's important that when profit gets to drive, shall we say, most of the decision making, overriding, shall we say, quality care, then it might be something to give some thought to as to when we want to make those kind of deals. I think now we're in a position where folks can look at that and realize maybe Steve Cornell, that lonely vote should have been joined by others as well. Thank you.
The sale of Bayfront did come with a lot of adversarial comments and thoughts, and they thought by going to privatization of Bayfront Center and giving those funds to the foundation now, Foundation for Healthy St. Pete, and they're actually trying to reinvest a lot of those dollars back into the community as an outsource from the things that we lost by losing Bayfront Center. And one thing that I found in my community is that then the population ended up going to St. Anthony's Hospital. And now it's gotten to the point where your emergency medical care is in jeopardy because after a certain amount of patients, St. Anthony closes down. And actually talking to a lot of the elders of the community, they're still upset about the sale of Bayfront because Bayfront had historical measure in the community. And not being able to afford that type of hospitalization has definitely been a detriment to our community. So what I would ask our deputy mayor now as city administrator is, although we can't go back and undo the resale, and although we have the Foundation for Healthy St. Pete that's actually trying to right that wrong by investing in some of the programs and in projects that we have in South St. Pete, if she had the opportunity moving forward, how would she rectify that, and how would she redirect any of those funds to best benefit those that lost the most during that transaction?
That council meeting was very important, but we can't read tea leaves. And we are here now, and how council and mayor moves forward on charity care and on Bayfront, it is absolutely a community asset. And having the having that work well for the community is imperative. I don't think anything would be gained from asking the deputy mayor what she was thinking or what she is thinking going forward, because we have to decide as a community how we want these important things to be handled going forward. That's why my campaign is focused on community engagement. I think every citizen needs to understand what resources are available to them and how they can leverage those to make their lives better. And so while we do have the Community for Healthy St. Pete, or if I misspoke that, I apologize. great things are happening with that foundation, and leveraging those foundation dollars to the hilt should be our priority moving forward, and getting in there and figuring out how we are going to rectify where we are right now.
I would like to couch this within the broader system. We have a system, as I said, that's built on the oppression of the Black community. And from there, we have a system that is all about profit. Our city is getting sold to the highest bidder, and the developers are running the city by paying into people's campaign coffers. So when we put reparations in the center, when we have a public policy of reparations, we transform the system in our city to be about the needs and aspirations of most of the people in the city, in the neighborhoods, and we begin with the Black community. When we do that, then we are able to move forward in a completely different way, not with our city being all about profit, but it being, again, about the needs and aspirations of the people.
Harvey Landris, this is directed to the three mainstream candidates. Your platform sounds pretty similar. What is the biggest criticism you have of each of your other mainstream candidates? Ms. Cox, Ms. Connor, and Ms. Fix Sanders.
I don't think it behooves anyone to criticize any of us.
Yes. The lady right here in the purple.
Betty Morgenstein. Assuming one of you is going to be on the city council after November, what would you see as the main thing that the St. Petersburg City Council should be working on, not just your district, but the whole city?
Thank you for asking that question. I think the number one issue is a livable wage, because I think that would address our housing crisis in terms of affordability. I think it would also take all of our residents, put them in a position where perhaps they can pursue home ownership and the benefits that come with home ownership and that sense of belonging that comes when that happens. I think it would be one of the best things we could do to connect downtown vitality to our neighborhoods if people have a livable wage. And I know it's a very interesting thing to pursue, but it's critical. And when you start talking about poverty reduction, when you start talking about a quality of life, you start talking about even having great school systems, you want home ownership. That's what's important. It takes $19 an hour, so I know we have to be realistic, but we can revisit it, absolutely, because one thing we've been struggling with is all this economic boom that's going on. How many African Americans, how many Hispanics, how many women are getting a chance to enjoy it? That would be my second focus, to take a look at our disadvantaged business enterprises and make sure we increase their utilization. They're doing it in Hillsborough County. They are doing it in the city of Tampa. I ran the program for the city of St. Petersburg when it was called Minority Business Enterprise Program. We got up to 22%. So when you're intentional, you can do what you need to do. That's how downtown has gotten to be so vibrant, and that's how our neighborhoods can grow and be safer as well. The third thing would be looking at homelessness. I think we need to put more emphasis on prevention and diversion and not just be guided by HUD guidelines alone.
One of the things that impact us citywide is our infrastructure. Not only just St. Petersburg, but other areas, cities in the area. For example, I was watching a news article this morning, news clip this morning. One homeowner, in order to go into her backyard, had to have on rain boots because of actual human feces and waste because of a broken infrastructure. Flooding affects us all. Poor water systems affects us all. Wastewater systems affects us all. This heavy rain affects us all. So the conversation we need to have citywide, that needs to be the first priority, and how we need to go ahead and spend the money to correct our infrastructure to make sure that our home property values don't go down, that a public safety threat of disease is not spread, our children can't play on the street. When you have raw sewage come up manholes in your streets, that's a citywide issue. It's not a north side, east side, west side. That is a city issue. And on city council, I do plan to make that one of the first focuses with the other seven city council members, because that is a true citywide issue.
I think affordable, attainable housing is the priority that needs to move forward on council. I think there is a focus on it right now, and things are pushing forward. I would like to state what I have been doing on affordable housing. I've been a member of a nonprofit that has renovated 11 houses and built four new houses in Midtown from private investment. And these are putting houses back on the market at an affordable cost for people to be able to afford it through absolute energy efficiency. I want to focus on different types of housing for all types of people to live in it, from students and elderly to people who are working, those in the middle, because everyone should be able to have a roof over their head that they call their own. That is what would be my priority on city council.
Well, my priority would be reparations to the Black community. I believe that that's how we solve all the other issues in the city. When we pay reparations, when we return the land under that dome with an infusion of capital, then the Black community will begin to create businesses, and there will be a sustainable economic life in the Black community. They'll also begin to build affordable housing. In my platform, we say halt the building of luxury apartments. We don't need any more luxury apartments here in St. Petersburg. We need affordable housing. Also, as far as the sewage infrastructure goes, from my point of view, the developers who've made millions of dollars off of our city, they need to pay to fix that sewage infrastructure. And we also need to acknowledge that it's not only climate change. Climate change affects it, but the reason we have a sewage crisis, where yesterday or the day before, our mayor allowed 21 million gallons of sewage to be dumped into our aquifer. That's where our drinking water comes from. Those kinds of decisions are based on the fact that he closed the sewage downtown, the sewage processing plant. When the people are in power, reparations puts the people in power, and when the people are in power, we would rebuild that sewage plant so that then, whether we have rain or not, we gotta expect rain in Florida, we would be able to process that sewage and not endanger our citizens. So again, transforming the focus of our city budget, the focus of our city policy, to have a public policy of reparations to the Black community, that begins to solve all the problems in our city.
Yes, sir, blue shirt right there.
My name is Joe Reed, and this is directed to all the candidates. As I'm sure you're aware of, the issues that you're debating here today, or many of them, have been before City Council for some time now. They've been scrutinized and they've been discussed at City Council. In just a few months, one of you will be on City Council with the opportunity to influence the outcome. So my simple question to you, and each candidate, is, in the last year, have you attended a City Council meeting, yes or no? And if yes, what was the issue or issues that brought this, prompted you?
Thank you for that question. Yes, I have attended several city council meetings because I wanted to see the operation and certainly gain information about pressing issues and get some idea as to the thought process of the individual council members. I also spoke on the rental inspection program because that's one of the programs that I ran for Mayor Fisher. And we were most concerned about tenants' rights because Pinellas County has one of the highest eviction rates. So I wanted to make certain that at least people knew from my perspective, having administered that program, how important it is and how vulnerable many times our tenants are because they feel intimidated by our landlords. And many times they don't have a legal recourse. And even though I chair the City of St. Petersburg Social Allocation Committee, and one of the programs we focus on homeless and homeless prevention services, it's only one legal services that actually applies for those grants to help tenants in those kinds of situations. So yes, I've attended the meetings. That was one of them. The other meeting I attended, there was a question pertaining to the use of body cameras. So yes,
okay,
I've attended.
Yes or no, because we want to get one.
Yes.
Yes, I've attended several meetings on several issues, and when I can't attend, I always watch it on the St. Pete TV channel.
I'm going to say yes. I have not attended since March when I got in the race, but I was definitely there last November. In February, I've had meetings with staff. I've been at DRC. I've also been at the CBC. And so I can tell you I've been at least 3 council meetings every year for at least 15 years.
I have been campaigning these last few months, but I have many times in the past been at City Council there to challenge the public policies. And what I notice is that City Council doesn't really listen to the citizens. It's really kind of disgusting to go only have 3 minutes. I've seen people roll their eyes, walk out of the room, depending on the issue. So I think it's really important that we bring the people to City Council.
Thank you. One more question. Lady back here, Megan.
Oh, Bonnie Sclarin. This question is for Trinia Cox. In the past, you've been saying that you plan to require developers to include help to pay for affordable housing. The legislature just preempted cities from being able to do that. So, do you have a plan to work around getting the developers to help pay for affordable housing?
Thank you. This whole issue of affordable housing and making certain that we're able to meet the needs of all of our populations is going to have a multifaceted approach to deal with it. Certainly, developers could have provided certainly some income with their impact fees, but at the same time, there are other ways to address it. And the mayor just recently put out that affordable housing plan. One of the things we can do, and I would be interested in seeing happen, is that all new construction would have to address the needs for market rates, for workforce, which is you're working poor sometimes, as well as for affordable for those who have no income at all or less than the $25,000. So that's important. That's number one. The other piece of it has to do with the fact that we're relaxing our zoning laws so that now we can go back to having those garage apartments. I remember when I was an urban planner with the city, if those were not permitted, they'd have to be removed and not used. So now we're allowing that to happen so we can increase the density to help meet the needs. The third thing I would ask is that the neighborhoods, in particular the ones where we find gentrification going on, that we really make a concerted effort to strengthen those neighborhood associations so they can more effectively advocate for the needs of those communities.
Thank you.
So reparations gets around this preemptive law. We are never going to be able to count on for-profit corporations, rich developers, to build affordable housing. I just think that's the most ridiculous thing. It's just piecemeal. It's ridiculous. They don't want to do it. They're not going to do it. But when we refocus our city, when we reprioritize our budget, when we put the people in power in the city, then we can allocate funds for affordable housing, for people to rehab their own homes so the Black community can stay in the south side of St. Petersburg, and so that other poor and working class people can have affordable housing. I think it's really important that we stop fooling ourselves. When you have a for-profit city that's selling itself to developers, building more and more luxury condos, occasionally saying something about affordable housing, and then the next day going and breaking ground on a luxury apartment building, it's all smoke and mirrors. We need to look closely at what our government is doing, and we have an opportunity in this election to make a difference. You can elect me in District 5, you can elect Aretha Akile Kenyon in District 7, and we can recreate our city.
Thank you.
As far as including the developers in new construction, and I'm sorry if I missed the question. What was the question again? Because it got off to it. What was the question again? I'm sorry.
It was about the legislature preempting the city from allowing toilet paper, developers to contribute to building.
I think developers should pay their fair share when it comes to developing in the city. But one thing that we really need to understand as citizens is that we have to understand how much the city can impact private transaction. If real estate is actually owned by a private owner, there's only so much the city can do. Now, I do agree with the community benefit agreement, where we ask new developers to come in and actually provide their contribution as far as jobs, wages, and contribution to our infrastructure. That I do agree with, and I do wholeheartedly would like to see the other seven council members have that same conversation. So as far as development coming in, it's kind of hard to get ahead of big developers, but it's definitely doable to make sure that we partner with those big developers, let them know our expectations as a city and as a city council, and to make sure that development actually benefits those, especially in those surrounding areas. Because again, we don't want development to come in and move those out. We don't want development to come in and that we can't afford to have our city, our residents of the city of St. Petersburg live or work there. But we do want to make sure that the developers do understand that they do have a contribution to our city, and we welcome the development of the city of St. Petersburg.
This issue was the subject of the city council meeting in November, where I stood up with about 65 other citizens when the confluence of development, historic preservation, and zoning came to a head. And what came out of it was people were kicked out of affordable apartments. The developer didn't have a way in the codes to provide money assistance to relocate them, and the historic preservation list had not been updated, and the city had not been nominating. So this has come to the fore, but linkage fees for developers are a must. We keep getting preempted by Tallahassee, and the only way to change that is to change the face of Tallahassee. But in of course, that's not going to happen overnight, but what we can do as a city is to continue to work around these things and to become involved, to read legal notices, even though it's not fun to do and they're very little. But a lot of the things that I've been doing over the past 30 years with civic involvement is showing up at zonings, rezonings, code enforcement. And these things are important because if you are aware of them, then you can change them. And so I want to bring people in from all over to understand that if someone only 500 feet gets a notice from you, if you're 600 feet, you don't have any idea when the bulldozers come. And I want everyone to know when that happens.
Thank you, ladies. Why don't you give these candidates a hand? Two of them next to you.
Thank you for coming out today to our guests, to our Tiger Bay members, and to our candidates today. Thank you, ladies. If you all would stay up here, we'll have a picture at the end. And we are going to award our best question of the day to Betty for her question regarding, after you are elected, what is your number one priority for the entire city of St. Petersburg? Mark your calendar for September 19th. We welcome senior consultant to the National Popular Vote Campaign, Patrick Rosenstein. Registration is now open. It's going to be a great discussion about the National Popular Vote. So please mark that on your calendar. And Betty, if you will come up, we will get a picture. And thank you again for coming out today. Remember, vote.
Tiger Bay Chair Elise Minkoff has gaveled today's edition of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club to a close at the St. Pete Yacht Club. You've heard a candidates forum involving the five candidates in Tuesday's St. Petersburg City Council District 5 primary election.